only power comes in death. How many of you would sacrifice yourself to not kill, but merely hurt your enemy?
Not one of you, I wager.
I taste the blood in my mouth. I have the knife ring Dancer gave me, but I breathe the fury down.
I am no martyr. I am not vengeance. I am Io's dream, still, doing nothing while our murderer gloats feels like a betrayal.
In time you will receive your scars from my sword.
Augustus closes.
But first, you must earn them.
Chapter 17. The Draft.
Son of Linus and Lexus Au Andromedus, both of the House Apollo. Would you prefer to mark yourself as requesting House Apollo preferentiality?
A tedious Aureate administrator asks me.
Goldbrow's first loyalty is to color, then family, then planet, then house. Most houses are dominated by one or two powerful families. On Mars, the family Augustus, the family Bellona, and the family Arcos influence all others.
No, I reply.
He shuffles over his datapad. Very well. How do you believe you performed on the slang smarts test?
That is the extrapolational test, he clarifies.
I think my results speak for themselves. You are not paying attention, Darrow. I shall mark that against you. I am asking for you to speak for your results.
I think I took a gory piss on your test, sir.
Ah. He smiles. Well, you did. You did. House Minerva for brains might be right for you. Perhaps Pluto for the deviousness. Apollo for the pride. Yes. Well, I have a test for you. Please complete it to the best of your ability. Interviews will commence when you have finished.
The test is quick, and it is in the form of an immersion game. There's a goblet on a hill that I need to acquire. Many obstacles stand in my way. I pass them as rationally as possible, trying to hide my anger when a little elf steals a key I acquire. But every step of the way there's some damn setback, some inconvenience. And it's always unforeseen. It's always something beyond the bounds of extrapolation. In the end, I reach the goblet, but only after killing an annoying wizard and cruelly enslaving the race of elves by means of said wizard's magic wand. I could have left the elves be, but they annoyed me. Soon, the interviewers come in intervals. I learn they are called proctors. Each one of them is a peerless scard. They are chosen by the arch-governor to teach and represent the students of the house within the institute. All said, the proctors are impressive. There's a huge, scarred man with hair like a lion and a lightning bolt on his collar for Jupiter, a matronly woman with gentle golden eyes, and a quick-witted man with winged feet on his collar. He can't sit still, and his baby face seems immensely fascinated by my hands. He makes me play a game with him, in which he puts out both hands flat and facing up, and I put mine atop, facing down. He tries slapping my hands, but never quite manages. He leaves after clapping his hands together in joy. Another strange encounter comes when a beautiful man with coiled hair interviews me. A bow marks his collar. Apollo. He asks me how attractive I believe myself to be, and is displeased when I undershoot his estimate. Still, I think he likes me, because he asks me what I would like to be one day. An imperator of a fleet, I say. You could do great things with a fleet, but a lofty notion. He sighs, accenting every word with a feline purr.
Perhaps too lofty for your family. Maybe if you had a benefactor of better familial origin. Yes. Maybe then.
He looks at his datapad.
But unlikely due to your birth. Best of luck.
I sit alone for an hour or more, till a sullen man comes to join me. His unfortunate face is pinched like a hatchet, but he has the scar, and a razor hilt hangs on his hip. His name is Fitchner. A wad of gum fills his mouth. The uniform he wears is black with gold, and it nearly conceals the slight belly paunch that sticks outward despite the faint smell of metabolizers. Like many of the others, he wears badges about his personage. A golden wolf with two heads decorates his collar, and a strange hand marks his cuff.
They give me the mad dogs, he says. They give me the killers of our race, the ones full of piss and napalm and vinegar.
He sniffs the air.
You smell full of shit.
I say nothing. He leans against the door and frowns as though it offended him in some way.
Then back to me, sniffing improperly.
Problem is, we of House Mars always burn out. Kids rule the Institute at first. Then they find out that napalm lasts about...
He snaps his fingers. I have no reply.
He sighs and props down in a chair.
After a while of watching me, he stands and punches me in the face.
If you punch me back, you will be sent home, Pixie.
I kick him in the shin. He limps away, laughing like a drunk Uncle Nero. I'm not sent home. Instead, I find myself escorted with 100 others into a large room with float chairs and a large wall dominated by ivory gridwork. The gridwork forms a checkerboard square on the wall, 10 rows high, 10 rows across. I'm taken on a lift to the middle row, some 50 feet off the ground. 99 other students are ushered in till each box is filled. This is the prime crop, the best of the students. I look out from my box, peering up above me. A girl's feet dangle out of the box above my head. Numbers and letters appear in front of my box.